Hello and welcome to Stop Hammer Time. We just played Wolves up at Molyneux and came away with a draw. More of that later. Joining me, and it's been a long time since we've had him here, it is author, broadcaster, journalist, and now editor of Heat Magazine, Sam Delaney is back with us.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
Hello there. Everyone all right?
Yeah, I'm great.
Good. Excellent. We were supposed to be joined by Chris Akabusi.
Akabusi's let us down.
He has let us down. He's not here. He maybe thought he could just shout from outside the building, but somehow the microphone would just pick his voice up.
Akabusi would probably shout from wherever he lives, and it would be crystal clear.
Exactly, exactly. But no, we've sat here and waited for him, but we've decided to start. So if he comes in, because he has done that before, burst in during one of the podcasts and just joined in. So perhaps that'll happen. Perhaps it won't. We were just talking about Record Breakers, actually.
Yeah, I mean, Akabusi, I was looking forward to meeting him. I've never met him. He's let us down, which I'm very disappointed by. But I would say, although that he is obviously a national legend in the field of athletics and just general joviality, because let's face it, he's one of Britain's happiest men.
He is.
His shoddiness doesn't entirely surprise me, because I'll be honest, Record Breakers did go downhill once Akabusi took over from Roy Castle. I felt Roy Castle, the classic Roy Castle and Norris McWhirter double act.
Absolutely.
It was fun, but they were sticklers for the details and the rules of record breaking. I felt once Akabusi and Cheryl Baker took over, almost anything would constitute a record.
It's extraordinary that in presenting a programme about world records and stuff, they kind of sort of thought about people's qualifications for doing it and decided to pick a trumpeter and tap dancer to present that show rather than some kind of statistician or
well, McWhirter, he knew his stuff.
Yeah, he did.
Cheryl Baker, I mean, don't get me wrong, Making Your Mind Up was a great Eurovision entry.
It was.
But did it constitute a record of any sort? I don't think so.
It did not.
Has she ever, for instance, spent painstakingly lined up to 10,000 dominoes one by one, just half an inch apart, then tapped the first one and watched them all click-clack, click-clack, click-clack down in an amazing procession that...
There's always one tiny strip that never quite goes down, isn't there? In any record attempt with dominoes, there's always one strip that doesn't quite work. But yet they still allow the record, and that's good.
One more record breaker's got gripe. The guy who claimed to be the fastest talker on the planet, right? How did we know he was actually speaking actual words? He spoke so quickly, it could have just been a noise.
Yeah.
How did they monitor that?
Slow it down.
They didn't have the audio. They didn't have the audio.
Well, this is another argument for goal line technology. There should be some kind of tape recording, sort of NASA style equipment that can detect radiation from dying planets. Just focus on his mouth, just to tell.
I never bought that guy. Never.
No.
Anyway.
There's that old blooper of that bloke speaking really quickly, isn't there, in the black and white interview, the sort of sort of Dockers strike in Belfast or something, and the bloke, they're going, you have to, and that's the, because I think the interviewer is kind of Northern Irish as well, and is going, no, you can speak a little slower, the microphone will pick your voice up, there's no need to shout, it'll pick the voice up, and he's going, right. So what's the reason for this strike? Wait, the people don't have a chance. What's happening? No. Speak. The microphone will pick the voice up. There's no.
Is this available on YouTube?
I think it is. Yeah, it
Brilliant.
Might be. Yeah, it's very good. It's very good. So we have some answers to emails during the course of the show. We asked you if you've met any famous hammers. This is a continuation of last week's meeting famous hammers. We also started a little strand on players' nicknames, because we were just talking earlier today when you used to have Julian the Terminator, Dix, Martin, Mad Dog Allen, Psycho, David Cross, and those seem to have faded away slightly. And
I remember we used to call Stuart Slater Biffer, which was an ironic nickname because he was so wee. One of my favourites. Yeah.
Fortune's Always Hiding used to try and sort of get them going, because I think he used to call Julian Dix Biffer, Biffer Dix, who had one anyway, as we know, the Terminator. But those are just a bit. Should there be any new ones, and can we think of any during the course of the show? So we'll be coming up with that. And also, we'll be talking about the Wolves game, and we'll begin talking about it now. So, yes, obviously, infuriatingly, we scored a goal and had it disallowed at the end of the game, in the dying seconds of the match. Yep. We won that game, but had the win taken away for us.
Yeah, we were robbed. We were absolutely robbed. But, in the second half of that match, we had several chances to have finished them off.
Yeah.
We're very much becoming a second-half team under Grant, which is encouraging.
Yes.
Because traditionally, for the last two seasons, under Zola and under Kerbishley as well, we got off to flyers. And, you know, the old story with us, especially at home, was that we would, you know, we go in at half-time thinking we should have put the game to bed.
Yeah.
Much like Wolves should have at the weekend against us. And then second half, we blow it. I would rather it the other way round. I think anyone would rather have their team perform better in the second half, and Avram Grant seems to be proactive in tactical adjustments.
Exactly, yeah. He's the first manager since Pardew who's been able to make changes within a game, and changes that quite clearly work. And there's a sort of not necessarily a change of shape on Saturday, but somehow a kind of tactical change, maybe he gave them a bit of a rocket. But that's so hard to imagine.
I can't imagine what Grant does at halftime.
Comes in and just generally haunts them.
Yeah, just stands there like Baron von Greenback from Danger Mouse. Ciberoni. That was actually a sidekick.
It's
Crow.
More frightening when he smiles, isn't it? It's grim when he doesn't
maybe
smile.
Maybe that puts the wind up them. Yeah. Maybe it gives them the willies, to speak, and that's why they come out and perform to such high standards.
His head peers round a sort of velvet curtain, and he just smiles gently at them, and they all go, and go out and play
much
better.
The way he dresses all in black and... Yeah, I mean, he's a sinister character, but maybe that's what works for him. But certainly he's doing something. It's
seem to be a genuine sort of degree of tactical thought there. Though they do, what does happen, I mean, they're part of this second half phenomenon, is they do sort of come out and underperform a bit in the first half and then have to kind of put it right.
The only way is up in the second half. But certainly it felt like we were all over Wolves second half. They didn't have many chances.
No.
It's frustrating because... Obinna in particular seems to have everything in his repertoire other than finishing.
So
he gets himself into a number of amazing positions, creates chances almost at will. I mean, he gets the ball and he will create a chance every time, but he just cannot finish.
No.
Cole came on and had the similar problem.
Oh, dear.
And Pickwan?
He likes the woodwork, doesn't he? He generally likes to see if you can bounce the ball off the bar or the upright.
Which in many ways is more of a precision skill than boring old goal scoring.
Exactly, yeah.
It takes more talent in many ways to pick out a crossbar than it does a massive gaping net.
Yeah, he's a purist, rising to the challenge.
He finds goals vulgar.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but he was he controlled the ball with his chest and put it in the goal, and the referee decided that he'd picked it up and thrown it in the goal like a shot putter.
Tragic, but having said that, sorry to be philosophical about the whole thing, but we've gone up to Wolves. We've extended our unbeaten run, which is great for our confidence. It was a bit of an early season 6-pointer, and actually a point is
fair
not
result.
Bad.
No,
it's
fair result.
Much more sickening for a Wolves fan, isn't it?
Yeah. Mick McCarthy is in profile any way you look at him, isn't he? You look at him straight on, he's still in profile.
He defies geometry.
Exactly. It's an extraordinary something. It's like a kind of hole. There's like a nexus in the fabric of the universe when you look at him, and you're suddenly looking at someone in like five dimensions.
He reminds me a great deal of... Do you remember the kind of eagle character in The Muppets? That sort of eagle with the hook knife. What was his name?
Sam.
Yeah, Sam, the American Eagle. Yeah, he looks very much like him, but with a bizarre Yorkshire twang.
Yeah, yeah. Holograms were based on Mick McCarthy, the idea that you could see someone in sort of a strange three dimensions whilst looking straight
at it. My favourite thing about Mick McCarthy is the fact that he is one of those managers who insists on not only wearing shorts and football socks and football boots, but also shin guards on the touchline, as if he's actually going to come onto the pitch and play at any moment. That's still a possibility.
Yeah, he obviously saw kind of a review about a manager about whom they said he kicks every ball and took it really literally and wants to run on the pitch.
He'll start
playing.
Smearing himself in mud before the game as well, to bring himself even more into the thick of the action.
He gets in the bath with them after the game, despite the fact hasn't really done anything.
No.
Very strange. He's all in the, there's, you know, this, there's just now this Axis of Evil, isn't there, of football managers. Tony Pulis is in it, I think.
Yeah.
McCarthy, Sam Allardyce, McCarthy is in it.
They're the forces of conservatism.
They are, exactly. Yeah. They are. North Korea is in, in that axis.
Yeah, Kim Jong-un, the new guy who's taken over in North Korea,
is in the...
is very much in the same pack.
Simon Cowell.
Pulis.
Simon Cowell's in it.
You got your Un, your Cowell, your Pulis, your Allardyce, and your McCarthy.
Exactly,
And, they're all into kind of the same kind of negative approach aggressive negative approach.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Bill Sykes from Oliver Twist, he's in it as well.
I felt, you know, Wolves, they all said, you know, you go up to Wolves, especially at their place, that, you know, you're going to be in for a real fight, and that's the way they approach every game. And, you know, obviously West Ham, going back for many decades, were the one team that, you know, oppositions north of Watford always thought, oh, you can totally petrify them. They're softies. You can terrify them away from home. And Wolves, of all teams this season, a reputation they fast established, you would have thought we'd cave in. But there is something about this Avram Grant team, which, again, completely defies everything you would assume about Avram Grant's character.
Yeah.
That has a real steel to them.
Yeah, that's right.
There's a steeliness to this team. They're
we did slightly give them that first goal. That was, it wasn't just the weak green punch. There was a kind of... inside, the ball bounced a bit around inside the area, and Da Costa and Noble left it for each other at one point and were dispossessed by a Wolves back.
It was the case of as that you were. I'll leave that to you.
And, you know, one of those two could have whacked it into the stand and that goal wouldn't have been scored. And it was, you know, the green punch was a bit weak, but, you know.
What I mean, though, is that we didn't get out-fought. They didn't intimidate us. They didn't kind of provoke us or anything like that.
Well, I think there's certain. I mean, getting a proper right back has really shored that defence up.
Yeah,
you know, it's
absolutely.
Like there's actually it's like a four man defence now. Matthew Upson wasn't playing because it, you know, it was a religious holiday, Martin Luther King Day. I don't know what day it was. It was a half day closing.
You know, that's he's very serious about that sort of thing. Yeah, so I think we should respect that.
Yeah, absolutely, I respect his opinions of not wanting to play.
I thought he was a Scientologist, Matthew Upson.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think he may be. But anyway, I think that...
Tom Cruise's birthday.
I think he was invited to that.
Quite possibly.
Yeah.
We've had some tweets. Now, we were discussing, as I mentioned earlier, nicknames for players and the fact that those seem to have disappeared. We've got a few tweets. Dave Guja, or Gudger, has said, Carlton, Barndor, Banjo, Cole.
bit wordy, that
it
one.
Is, it
doesn't
is,
trip off the tongue.
Yeah. Avram, Uncle Avi Grant. I'm all behind that. I think everyone's calling him Uncle Avro, Uncle Avram. I think Jim does. I like Uncle Avram. Because he's a bit like Uncle Fester.
Uncle Fester,
yeah, it's Uncle Avram. That's the... Freddie Pickwon Pickian. The picker, the pickmeister. Kieran Glassknees Dyer. I think a substitute Kieran Dyer would be quite a good nickname.
I've got a favourite from this list that's come from Dave Goodger, and it's Harita Rita Olunga.
Oh, nice.
I like an unambitious nickname, you know, one that's just like just a little bit like your actual name. I think that's funny.
Oh, I'm not going to remember this now, but there was a spell of feminising the... Because Linda McCartney, George McCartney, was called Linda McCartney, Rita Ilunga, and there was a little spell of feminising
there was.
Nicknames
Who
West
was
Ampers.
He was called Sharon? Was it Alan Dickens? I think Alan Dickens was known as Sharon.
Was it Alan Dickens?
Yeah, it might... So definitely someone was known as Sharon. I think it was Dickens, but I'm sure some listeners will be in touch to verify or contradict me.
If you want to contradict Sam, and I know it's a very popular pursuit, do so at hammertime@playbackmedia.co.uk, hammertime@playbackmedia.co.uk. You can get all our links to Facebook, Twitter and iTunes by simply keying in westhampodcast.com or punching the requisite cards to put in your IBM mainframe computer if you still have one. You have to punch the cards slash slash dollar dollar whatever that ASCII code was in the 70s. But generally speaking, westhampodcast.com will get you where you want to go. Or follow us at Twitter on twitter.com/westhampodcast, as indeed Greg Jones, Dave Farmington, G. Goodwin and Edith May, amongst others, have done so. Or there's our iPhone app. Sam, have you got this app?
I do, actually, yeah.
I have an old-fashioned telephone with that top bit that you pick up and hold against one ear and the candlestick.
Yes. Hello, Worthing 465.
That's right. Stoke Newington 423 is
is that Mr. Phipps the Butcher?
bit.ly/West Ham app is how you get there. Now, yeah, I've got some. Yes, here's some nicknames. Graham Halliday has come in with some. Kieran... This is good. Kieran the Inferminator.
Good.
That's nice. Benny McCarthy, he feels, should be called Hamburglar. These are good. Yeah. Strictly Scott Parker. And he says, due to his 360-degree pirouettes he does when he gets
the
ball.
He likes those, doesn't he? Yeah.
Well, that's a Noble's the same. And they both seem to get it from John Moncur. John Moncur
was
the guy that was so one-footed that essentially he had to go around. You know, like when a cat settles down to go to sleep or a dog and does about 720 degrees. They're both like that, aren't they? Very one-footed players. One thing I wanted to talk about was if we go all-seater, we're already all-seater, but if we go to the Olympic Stadium, I'd really like us to try the moat of standing seats that they think should happen. And I've been on the internet lately. A lot of these organisations want to see a return to putting standing areas in football grounds, and I think this would be a good time for us to try it.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the Bundesliga, they keep standing. By all accounts, the Bundesliga is one of the best European leagues to, you know, from a fan's perspective, the experience of the game. They still have standing.
Cheap to get in.
It's cheap to get in.
Big stadium as well, like 60,000
They
seaters.
Also have a, I'm told, a fella who goes around with a massive tank of beer on his back with a hose, and you pay him €1 and he tops your glass up throughout the game. You can drink beer whilst you stand watching a football match, and someone fills you up for €1 a time with top premium German lager. All of those things combined make it a very attractive prospect. I read an article by some Chelsea fans who have been priced out of going to Chelsea because it's so ludicrously expensive there. And instead of their season tickets, for less than their season ticket, they worked out that every, like, once or twice a month, they could afford to get, you know, a budget airline flight to a random German city, buy a ticket to the game, stay in a reasonably priced hotel for the night, have a good few beers at the match and, you know, some bockwurst or whatever it is you want to eat, and it would still be considerably less than the, you know, the price you would pay to travel to Chelsea and get the ticket and pay for food for your kid and all the rest of it. Plus, of course, you're not surrounded by arseholes.
Yeah.
We're surrounded by Germans, but, you know, not nearly as bad as Chelsea fans.
Nope, exactly.
So, you know, all things considered, if you are a Chelsea fan, you happen to have accidentally tuned in to stop Hammer Time, I would suggest you renounce supporting Chelsea immediately and either kill yourself or start following a German side.
Chelsea fans have it rough, though, Sam. Yeah. Don't kill yourself, I say.
Okay,
but please,
sorry.
If you're listening, please, please give Chelsea fans the money to go away on a weekend's holiday to watch a German football club of their choice. Just
Wolfsburg, Schalke, whoever you feel inclined to view.
Yes, exactly. My friend goes to watch Eintracht Frankfurt and says great, really good atmosphere. But that's exactly right. Yes, they let them drink in the ground. They let them stand up because that's what mature adults can do.
Yeah, exactly.
And
That could be the problem with introducing that kind of thing to English football.
Exactly. Manchester City, as a punitive measure against Manchester United fans, have withdrawn part of their part of their away ticket allocation to the game because they have the audacity to stand up for much of the game.
The
Manchester United fans visiting Manchester City, they're going to cut down their allocation because they have the audacity to stand up. During the game. You just go, you know. Does anyone actually like football that runs football now?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, the thing is, right, I don't even smoke, right? I don't smoke. But it comes to something where you're standing outside at a football match. You can't drink. You can't smoke.
No.
You can't swear.
Yep.
You can't stand, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
They're going to stop you from even smiling soon.
Exactly.
You know? I don't know. Cameron's Britain.
Yes. Oh, Nazis. Yeah, so Kieran Glassknees Dyer, I've got. That's yep. another one. That says from Dave...
Danny the Gob Gabadon.
Danny the Gob Gabadon.
Yeah, I'm not so keen on that. I like an unimaginative one. I really hope... Sorry to go back to Alan Dickens, but the more I think about Alan Dickens being called Sharon, the more sure I am about it.
Yeah.
And I also just think there's something lovely and bizarre and surreal about calling him Sharon.
Yeah.
And also,
yeah,
he was yeah. a player of the 80s, and the name Sharon has such an 80s ring yeah, to it. It does. Seems perfect. My favourite all-time player nickname, which wasn't a West Ham player, if we're going to go off West Ham, was Terry Dog Boy Phelan. Do you remember Terry Phelan? He was a hell of a player. He was a fullback for Manchester City in the Republic of Ireland. I think he also played for Wimbledon.
There was in a one of those great Liverpool, teams. Wasn't there?
It wasn't him.
No, not him. City.
But right. Terry Phelan, he was a stocky mixed race lad.
Yeah.
And he played for Wimbledon, then City, and he was great for Republic of Ireland as well. But he looked like a pit bull terrier. He was stocky, and he had a kind of a Mike Tyson neck. And he was called Dog Boy, and I think that's a hell of a nickname.
Yeah.
And I remember that there was also a guy called Andy Dibble who played in goal for Man City, and his nickname was Andy Officer Dibble.
Yeah, had to be brilliant.
Those are two. Yeah, hand it to the Man City fans; they knew how to dream up a nickname.
Jan Drew Taylor has come in. Nigel the Relegator Quasi.
Yeah, so
that's
good.
Very nice. Very nice. Matt Mute Upson is that reflects what I've said about him.
Yeah.
He's not much of a talker. Pablo Who Barrera is one. Yeah, it's just a shame we don't seem to pick him very much to play.
Yeah, I think he's like an old fashioned luxury player, Barrera, from what I've seen of him.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, It's worrying because Dyer seems to be an integral part of the team now, you know, and a lot of our attacks come through Dyer when he plays. When he doesn't play, you kind of think, well, you know, can Barrera perform that kind of an all-round game?
Well, he's nervous about dropping Boamorte, isn't he? Because I think Boamorte's sort of combative qualities are attractive. And I think we sort of said this last week in a way that... I think he's got to sort of have the courage to say there's enough steel in Parker and Noble to be the kind of the midfield sort of hub. And because, you know, two's normally enough for a kind of steely midfield pairing. If you just kind of want hard men to entirely populate your midfield, I think it feels a bit negative. And it sort of seems that the courageous thing is if Dyer can actually play a full game, which sort of seems unlikely, or is sort of fit enough to start, the courageous thing would be Noble, Parker, Barrera and Dyer. You know?
I don't know really enough about Barrera yet. I haven't seen lots of him. Because he hasn't played that much, has he?
No, that's
but I kind of get the impression from him. He's not a big lad, and he's extremely tricky going forward. But it's like that old-fashioned winger that you don't get in many teams anymore. Nowadays, everyone has to be like bloody Dirk Kuyt. You know, you're kind of a wide player, but and you're supposed to be an attacker, but your main focus is on tackling people.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So everyone's a fullback. So, Barrera seems like an old-fashioned luxury player who's just there to do stepovers and what have you.
Yeah.
Dyer, when he's fit and at his best, seems to be able to do both. Because Dyer actually started off as a right-back, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. He's a defender,
So he can do it. I don't know, Barrera, whether or not they would feel confident, certainly away from home, playing a lad like him.
But I mean, presumably they must have seen enough of him in training and stuff to decide, but... You know, Ben Ayoun was a small, kind of small-framed man, but would put tackles in, you know, good in the air. Ben Ayoun, you know, could head the ball. And just because a player is of a kind of slight build, like Barrera is, doesn't mean that he might not actually be able to put his foot in and tackle a little bit and stuff like that. And, you know, and also good players, you know, tend to not really have to go to the ground all that much. And, yeah. You know, be interested to see that. But, yeah, it was good to see Dyer back again after mysteriously disappearing after the Spurs game again for two or three games where he seemed to vanish for some mysterious health related
reason.
Yeah,
he's a bit of an enigma, isn't he, Kieran Dyer?
Yeah.
Yeah. We get the odd story in about Kieran Dyer at Heat Magazine. I'm not going to go into it, but I think, you know, he's a mystery.
Mm.
He's a mystery. I think he's a fantastic player, and I think that if we got a whole season out of him, I know you've spoken about that recently on the podcast, if you get a whole season out of Kieran Dyer, you know, it could be the real difference
between,
you know, five or six places in the league.
You know, off the bench or starting. I mean, he is a kind of, if he ever sort of comes back and has a kind of sort of an Indian summer of his career, he could be fantastic for us. And that first period against Spurs, he was really everywhere. He's able to kind of command the ball, find the ball, get in positions where he's passed to, and those are all three different ways of saying the same thing.
Yeah.
That's eaten up a bit more time. I'm just really padding now. What I'm going to do is essentially say the same thing.
I'm going back to something that I've been listening to recently on the show, on the last episode, about West Ham players that you have met. Well, I've been lucky over the years, partly just through fluke, partly through, you know, my journalistic pursuits, to have met several West Ham players. And obviously the team that is dearest to my heart and the one that kind of, you know, forged the greatest memories of following West Ham was, of course, the great Matty Holmes team. It was the 1986 team that finished third. And I started going through it when I was listening to the last podcast.
Oh, Matty Holmes.
Matty Holmes is a great player, but it wasn't a great team. But
no.
The 1985-86 team, the classic lineup of it, right? I went through it and I realised one by one, I had met the majority of the players.
Wow.
So now I've become obsessed with the ones I haven't met and how I can go about trying to meet them.
Brandier?
Phil Parks.
Yes.
I was actually, ironically, at a QPR game. I've got a brother who's a QPR fan.
Yes.
And we were in a hospitality area, and Phil Parks, the Judas that he is, now works in a hospitality capacity for QPR on match days.
Yep.
Of course, that's who we signed him of, and he still has his sports shop, I believe, on the Uxbridge Road, just near Loftus Road, Parksies.
Yeah.
So he works there. So I met him there. They were having some kind of cheese and wine event before a game that I was lucky to get myself into, and I met Phil Parks then. Ray Stewart, haven't met him.
Ah.
Greatest penalty taker
Greatest
penalty taker in the world, ever. I think everyone would agree on that. Ray Stewart, if you're listening, we need to get you involved.
Yep.
George Parris, I met on a train when I was a student on the way to Brighton. He was playing for Brighton and Hove Albion, and I was at Sussex University down the south coast. I was with my girlfriend, I just started going out with at the time, and I think I was supposed to be impressing her by acting cool or being romantic with her, whereas in fact I became preoccupied with the fact that an obscure West Ham left back was sat a few seats away.
Yeah.
And I bothered her all the way through saying, I really want to go and talk to that guy, he's like legendary at West Ham. And in the end I did, and we got in like a house on fire. She didn't seem very impressed.
No.
Tony Gale, very charismatic character.
I've met him.
Yeah, fantastically charismatic, hilarious man. I met him. Mark Ward, I became actually quite friendly with a couple of years ago. To the extent that when he was in prison, we were pen pals.
Wow.
Genuine true story.
Fantastic.
Mark Ward went
Conjugal visit?
We lobbied hard for that, but the governor was an absolute nightmare.
Oh, no.
So, in fact, what happened was...
Were you smuggled in inside a cake?
No, I did visit him. I don't know if you're familiar with that scene in Midnight Express. I pushed my breast up to the glass screen just to titillate him while he pleasured himself.
Wardy would have loved that.
Well, Wardy, I mean, I thought to myself...
Knowing Wardy as I don't, he would have loved that.
You've done so much for us West Ham fans with your aggressive and direct wing play in the mid-80s. Oh. The least I can do for you is press my man boob up to the glass partition.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you just you know, download that to the old memory bank for when you're in your cell later. Yeah, it's the least I can do. But Wardy, we were genuine pen pals.
It was that night that he said to the warders, I'd like to wash my own sheets from now on.
Oh, God. After all he's done for me, I feel awful.
Get him on the show.
Yeah, we will get Mark Ward on the show. Next time he's in London, I think he's back in the northwest now, but he's a great guy.
Yeah.
His book I can recommend as well that he wrote about his experiences both of football and... in the, you know, the unfortunate circumstance he found himself in.
Emergency Ward 10.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I think he played number 7, but he fudged that because it was a good title for a book.
Yeah.
The central midfield of that team was ordinarily made up of Alan Sharon Dickens and either in the defensive midfield role, Jeff Pike or Neil Law, neither of whom I've met, and I haven't met Sharon either. He became a black cab driver after leaving us for Chelsea. I don't know what he's up to nowadays, but it'd be great if we could get him on the show both to talk about those times and about his cabbying days, which no doubt are littered with hilarious anecdotes, but also to confirm the Sharon nickname.
Yes.
Alan Devonshire met him, couldn't believe it. They said to me, who's that? You know, he looks like the little blue cat out of Top Cat now, Benny.
Benny,
He's completely round and bald. He was willowy, long-haired and bearded.
Yes.
Now he is hairless, short and rotund.
Like Sid Barrett from the Pink Floyd, who latterly in his life was sort of bald and fat.
He filled out and thinned out.
Yeah, filled out and thinned out.
Absolutely amazing. And of course, Frank McAvenny, I met on episode of Stop Hammer Time.
Which you can still find on iTunes.
Oh, well, it's worth a second listen. I listen to it most days.
Do you?
Yeah. I do.
And I'm listening to it now, in the headphones I have now.
Simultaneously, yeah. I wondered why you were distracted.
Yeah.
And Tony Cotty, I've also had the pleasure to meet on a couple of occasions. But there you go, it's like a ticket, it's an obsession now, you know, it's ticking off the list.
Well, I'm going to turn this computer screen round to where you can see it. Look, there's Paul Sanders, a Stop Hammer Time listener and contributor to our Facebook site, and he's uploaded a picture of himself with Phil Parks.
That's a fantastic picture, and Parksy, unlike Dev, has remained almost exactly the same physically. That's how he looked when at the point of retirement. Poor old Parksy, he's probably the best keeper. I mean, I would say it's between him and Ludo. Although, I'm relatively young. I'm 35. But in my lifetime, those were the two best keepers I saw play for West Ham.
I think so.
But poor old Parksy, towards the end, his knees had gone, hadn't they? And I think they used to... George Parris's main job was to push Parksy over when there was a shot on goal because he was unable to actually dive of his own accord. So George Parris was picked just to push Parksy over. He'd go, push me left. And Parris would just push him over to sort of make it look like he was diving for the ball.
It's like that West End play War Horse where they had that massive puppet of a horse that several people moved around the stage.
Yeah, that's basically what happened to Parks for a good 3 years before we managed to sign him. But, you know, that in itself is testament to how poor Tom McAllister was, and not, let alone Alan McKnight as a stand-in.
Yes, Alan McKnight was a particularly poor keeper. Bernard Lama, we had. We like Bernard Lama. He smokes marijuana.
Yeah. He was a great keeper.
He was good, yeah. He was always very alarming when the ball was on the ground and he decided to try and take it past two of the advancing strikers of the other team because we were not actually playing all that well.
The thing is, he took over at a time when London had been flooded by the new, stronger strain of artificially produced marijuana, skunk.
That's right.
Okay, and that was the problem. That was the real problem. Before that, he had been used... He'd been in France. There was a lot of Moroccan hashish available, which was more of a milder vibe.
Yeah.
Once skunk kicked in, he thought he was Diego Maradona. He thought he could go around six players in the box.
It was always very suspicious when they threw those kind of branded Lucozade water bottles onto the pitch, and the bottom of his was on fire. I always thought that was a kind of and he just seemed to be breathing deeply from it rather than actually drinking from it.
Yeah,
very strange. I've got a story here, an email from Andrew Parsliff, and this is an interesting strand. What he's heading towards saying is, have any of your listeners bought strange items into Upton Park?
That's a brilliant question.
It is a good question. I'm a lifelong Hammers fan, he says, having seen my first game when Brian Deer scored 5.
Amazing. Awesome.
Yeah. In the early 80s, I was working for a music management company looking after the business affairs of diverse bands. I was the accountant. My boss advised me that he had just secured an agreement with an American merchandising company, but didn't tell me the details. On this Friday, a hippie-looking American came and proceeded to give me about £200,000 in various European currencies, which was the merchandising from a Judas Priest tour, the profits of all the T-shirts and stuff, and prior to going through Heathrow and returning to the US. About 5 o'clock and I couldn't get to the bank, nor could I leave the cash at the office as we were routinely broken into. So I decided to keep the cash on me, carrying it inside my snazzy skiing jacket. When I got to the gate at the North Bank, I barely had the £3 that it was in the 80s to get into the game. However, I did have £200,000 inside my jacket. I found it quite funny that at the time I could probably buy the whole of the back four, he says, especially if it included Keith Coleman. Today, that would be 1 week's wages, he says with a bitter note to his font.
Yeah.
I chaperoned the money till Monday. As it happened, I had lunch with our bankers. At the end, I asked if they had normal banking facilities at the office. They thought I wanted to cash a check and were somewhat surprised when I put the cash on the table.
Wow.
Yeah. I had to take a bass guitar in the ground once.
Well, I think it was
Give
probably...
us a tune, mate. I heard about 13,000 times.
Was it easier in those days? When was that you brought a bass guitar?
Oh, probably about 97.
I think that nowadays it's very hard to bring almost anything. I mean, they barely allow you to bring your own clothes in.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's right.
You know, it's very difficult, the security checks now. I can't remember. I remember I went for a phase. I've got some Italian relatives, and over there... They were Lazio fans. I used to go to the game then. They had this.
They won't let you take a gun into the ground.
No guns.
Very
I remember. And then I downgraded and said, well, is a taser gun all right? And they were even funny about that. I mean, they let me in the end, but they were sniffy about it, if I'm honest.
That's what they're like.
They used to drink Cafe Sport in Italy out of these little capsules, which was like a coffee based liqueur, and that's what they all drink. I think they still drink it in the ground. So I took some capsules over. And a bottle of the stuff, and we'd smuggle that in because it was a nice, warming little alcoholic shot. And I used to carry that in my pants because, you know, they'd search for that. It's not really that outlandish. I did once, we used to have a phase of, we used to drink in the Duke of Edinburgh after the game. And there was a, there's a greengrocer, which a lot of people will be familiar with, that sold a number of exotic vegetables that you weren't used to seeing.
Okra.
Yeah, okra, that sort of thing. And also strange fruits. There was a strange bendy shaped yellow fruit with a thick outer skin that you peel back to reveal its white fleshy innards.
Is this a banana?
They called it a banana.
Ah.
Right now. No, but anyway, we would buy, when we won, we would buy a celebratory vegetable or fruit from the exotic greengrocers. And in the end, after a particularly good season, I think it might have been that season when we had Berkovic in midfield and John Hartson on fire up front and Trevor Sinclair in the team also.
97-98.
We kept winning all the time, so we ran out of comedy vegetables. So then we upgraded to the Halal Butcher, and we would buy a celebrate. It was like a strange tradition. We would buy a celebratory meat product.
A halal
shop. I bought a massive halal liver to celebrate a victory over Tottenham once. But on the train, things became boisterous, and someone grabbed the liver off of me, and it got thrown about the carriage, and it was unsightly, and that was why I gave up buying foodstuffs to celebrate victories. It seems so juvenile now.
Pete Ward, who sometimes does this podcast, if we lose, buys a hot dog.
as
this kind of
Richie.
Flagellatory punishment
and
artery-thickening kind of...
I'll teach myself to support West Ham.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll eat this disgusting food stuff.
He's now 28 stone.
Yeah.
That story had a sad ending. John Pope met Dev. He says, I met the great Alan Devershire. Been waiting to meet him for a long time. And he purchased a T-shirt, kind of a retro T-shirt, I guess, with the great man's face, sort of circa 70s with the long hair and the tash, hoping to get him to autograph it, which he did. As he said, as he looked at the T-shirt and said, wait a minute, that's me. To which Tom Pope replied, I know. And Dev then said, fuck me, I ain't getting a penny for that. So he gave him the email address the company got it from, and he was delighted. He took it all in good fun and was an absolute gentleman, a really nice man, as you'd expect. Also, back in the 70s, whenever we were at home, we used to spend most Friday nights at the room at the top in Ilford. The room at the top must be the name of a place in Ilford. In the company of Keith Coleman and Keith Robson, two nice blokes. But could they drink? He says it's a rhetorical question.
Yeah.
Well, I'm guessing the answer is yes.
What he means is that they could drink.
They could
a lot.
Drink.
Okay,
exactly. Yeah. It's a literary device.
Yeah.
He's used rhetoric.
Rhetoric.
To make that point. Not a press man in sight. Happy days. And that's true, because if there was a if you did go out for a relaxing drink with another footballer, a tabloid paper would be there going, yeah, footballer has drink.
Yeah, I know. In those days, you know, if you wanted to go out and pursue the simple pleasures of a young, rich, successful footballer, such as binge drinking, drug abuse, violence,
pyramids of champagne glasses,
yeah, like huge. You know, being, you know, prostitution,
exactly,
soliciting prostitution, rape, all the things that modern footballers enjoy to do in, yeah, their spare time when,
exactly,
they unwind,
yeah,
right, and
just
the intrusive press keep reporting on it, and it just makes me sick because it's really taken the old-fashioned Corinthian spirit out of football,
exactly,
hasn't it?
Exactly. Poor old Kieran Dyer now has to play football quite a lot since he's
yeah,
regained his health.
And
that's eating into his...
Why? I'll tell you why. Murdoch.
Exactly. Murdoch's making Kieran Dyer play football
rather than pursue his... Those bastards in the media pulling the
strings. His relaxing spit-roasting... Yeah.
I just want to go out, have fairly aggressive sex with some, like...
9 or 10
some
other
women
footballers
who have been
and one woman
into the country against their will.
Exactly.
You know.
For Cheryl Cole.
Sake.
That's the we've got to wind it up on that note. On that
probably
bombshell.
For the best.
I think we probably do.
Incidentally, that wasn't in relation to any specific footballer
not,
named
no,
or unnamed during this podcast.
Exactly.
It was just a general surmising of the ludicrous world footballers live in.
We've taken an amalgam of players and created, yeah, a fictional footballer out of,
yeah,
all of them.
Yeah.
Let's call him Dave Hendry.
Yeah.
He'd be in that comic strip that's in the Sun.
Yeah, he's
about
a character.
The football manager.
Yeah.
So we're playing at Newcastle the weekend. Score,
exciting,
prediction.
I think we're going to turn them over 2-0. I don't think they're a very good team. They had one massive result at the beginning of the season over Villa, didn't they?
Yeah.
Which made us feel little, because Villa had turned us over with ease.
Yes,
and
yeah,
then the following week, they beat them 6-0.
Yes.
But they've got a lot of Premier League has-beens in their side.
Yeah.
I think we're on a good run of form, but we're due a win now.
Yeah.
And I feel confident, I do feel confident, that we will get a good result as long, you know, we don't seem to have any injuries thus far.
Nope.
So I think that we will get a good result, and I think we've got a good run of fixtures ahead of us at the,
yes,
moment.
Yes, that's right.
We do have Arsenal away, so we,
yeah,
can assume we'll get nothing out of that.
Nil point.
But the next kind of four games after that, I think we can gather some points,
yeah,
now and
absolutely
get ourselves in mid-table before Christmas.
Absolutely, yeah. I think so too. You're going for 2-0?
I'm going for 2-0.
I'm going to go for 2-1.
I just want to see Obina find the back of the net.
Yeah.
I know he has once, but he,
yeah,
keeps creating all these chances, getting in positions. It's only a matter of time, surely, before he works out how
he's
to actually hit the back of the net.
He's quite keen to score a beautiful goal, isn't he?
That's
so
the only
you
problem.
Get a sort
he
of
wants
strange
to
daisy cutter,
yeah,
from 30 yards, because, yeah, what he wants is a screamer from 30 yards.
He likes to score to take the free kicks as well, though, doesn't,
yeah,
he?
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe
he might
he'll
get
just,
one that way.
Get,
yeah,
one that way, yeah.
Yeah, as a sort of confidence builder, like when Tevez scored against Spurs from a free kick,
yeah,
then it unleashed the actual, in real terms, trickle of goals that followed. But
I was particularly taken, I mean, I've been to less games than I usually would have by this time of season, so I've been away a lot, but I was particularly taken by Don Peretta's assertion on a recent podcast that Obina, and Don does not say things loosely. He
no,
does not say them
he
with
won't
prior
say them.
Consideration.
He won't
say
do
them
that.
Unless he's,
no,
got total conviction.
Exactly.
And I was very taken by the idea that Obina was the best signing since Paolo Di Canio, which was over,
yes,
10 years ago.
Interesting, yeah, yeah, very, very, yeah. He's right. He could become a bit of a cult hero, I think.
Let's judge for ourselves solely on the basis of Obina's performance against Newcastle on Saturday.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
Let's do that. All right, this has been Stop Hammer Time with me this week, and it's wonderful to have him back, Sam Delaney.
It's been a pleasure.
And my name's Phil Whelan. See you around. Come on, you Irons.
This is a Playback Media production. Get all the associated links for this podcast at westhampodcast.com. If you'd like to sponsor or advertise on this podcast, please call our marketing partners Sports Revolution on 0207 580 2850 or drop them a line at info@sportsrevolution.co.uk.